Hello everyone. We are lucky today because we have three talks about Apache Beam. So if you're interested in Apache Beam, we are going to have all the morning and talks about it. The first subject is like an introduction to Beam. We argue in this presentation that Beam is a solid foundation to build evolvable big data pipelines. And we are going to discuss a little bit of the history of big data and why we think that Beam is a good foundation. The second talk is all about I/O and I/O connectors in Beam, and more than I/O is the new philosophy we have on composable I/O connectors. This is interesting because most of the other big data programming models don't pay that attention to this. If you care about that, it would be interesting too. And finally, the last presentation is a deep dive into the support for metrics in Beam. What we are going to improve a little bit the observability of Beam pipelines. Last ApacheCon, we have the first stable release of Beam. At this moment, we are voting one of the new releases, but we are kind of happy to see how the community has matured, and we are going to start. We are going to talk about how do you evolve data-intensive applications. My name is Ismael Mejia, and I work at Talen as a software engineer, and my colleague is...
My name is Alexey Romanenko. I'm a software engineer at Talen as well, and Apache committer.
Yeah. Okay, so the agenda is quite simple. We are going to discuss the state of affairs of big data, probably with a focus more in the Apache world. I mean, we are going to discuss a little bit of the systems that that started in Apache and how they have evolved in time and where we are. Then we talk about Apache Beam and how it fits. And then we present a really small example just to show you how easy it is to evolve data pipeline with Apache Beam. And finally, we present the ongoing works of the community, the future of Beam, what's happening. So first, the big data state of affairs. Let's say, of course, from the beginning of the 2000s, there was a huge amount of data that grew. And the first actors who found the problem of scalability were, of course, the search engines, people like Google and Yahoo, who had to scale computing and data analysis. But this was not only these big companies who found this issue. Even smaller companies were struggling with the problem of data distribution and distributed databases because a lot of people were in classical databases like relational databases, and they were hard to scale, they were hard to operate, and so they did there was a need for a change. And this change started with the revolutionary ideas of MapReduce. And in the MapReduce paper, there was this idea of we're going to distribute the data into this sort of distributed file system. And we are going to have a framework or a programming model of two operations, maps that just transform data. Then we had this shuffle phase. And finally, we have reduce. That was the way we group the data in a distributed fashion. That was a huge leap forward, but also was a little bit low level for many tasks. I mean, like the initial frameworks in Apache were most of them trying to solve this in different manners. And also, this was not suited for latent analysis in general. So Apache Hadoop was the implementation of Apache of this. And it offered, well, the distributed file system that we saw in the previous slide, the execution model through YARN, and the programming model that is MapReduce. So again, there was a lot of progress here, but it still was complex to do some kind of pipelines. And especially Hadoop, the implementation of Hadoop required a lot of writes, which was a little bit of a struggle to scale to. Other people in Apache implemented another idea of Google that was Bigtable, and this kind of a more closer to a database approach, a distributed database, that worked on top of Hadoop, and that introduced an idea of using better an approach on that they called column-oriented, and this was like the genesis of all these NoSQL databases at the time. So we had what I have called the Cambrian explosion of distributed databases in this slide. So many other Apache projects came, like Apache Cassandra, with different guarantees and different distributed model. Of course, there were also indexing databases like Solr, there was CouchDB, there were other databases oriented more to documents, and even distributed caches. So there was a huge amount of different models, let's say, that we had to program into, because most of these databases skip SQL altogether because there were other kind of needs. And in general, we have more utilities, more sets, more different setups, and more diverse APIs. This is an issue. But then this idea of having distributed programming frameworks continued, and then Apache Spark came into place, and Apache Spark was a huge improvement into ease of use compared to Hadoop. So that was super popular because of that. The model of Apache Spark used in-memory computations, and also it allowed to do iterative and interactive experiences. So it was really, really become the huge actor in big data world. So then, of course, there is still more progress in the Apache community. And then we have another kind of distributed database. Let's call it. It's a distributed log, with the semantics of a messaging query system with topics that is Kafka, and this gave rise also to the beginning of the streaming needs. Well, the streaming needs were always there, but we have a solid database to do this. And of course, again, another thing in Apache, well, we started to do the first frameworks to do distributed programming, and this is what Storm did. And as you can see, the problem is not that different from the MapReduce problem. We still have operators that are going to transform some data into a different form. For example, there we are filtering data by colors, and then we are grouping this data, which resembles a little bit what we do in MapReduce. But there are not strong guarantees in this kind of processing. So we need a more robust model for this. So now, after that, another boom of systems, and these are the systems to do generic distributed data processing, with different programming models. So again, we have another family of APIs, another family of that people have to learn, and that you cannot move your code from one to the other because, well, they are so different. So if you program, for example, a job with Spark, it's really hard to implement the same thing in a Storm. So let's say we need some kind of unification also in that aspect. And this brings us to the fact that in the end, we still have the fundamental problem that we have had forever in the data systems, is that we want to integrate data, we want to analyze data. And in general, we are still having the same extract and transform and load data problem. But it's even worse because we have all the semantics of these databases in the middle and all the semantics of these data distribution frameworks there too. So this is something that is still an issue. I mean, some of the people think like, oh no, since we are in this kind of waves of hype, the new wave of hype is machine learning and all this stuff. But we have to remember that even in machine learning, you have to prepare the data before you train your models. And this comes from a Google paper that mentions all the operational issues that can happen when you are doing big analysis of data, and especially advanced analysis like what you do in ML. And so this is still a problem. This is still an open issue. The evolution of all these systems continues. It's not like we are stopped in time. Now we have more needs. For example, people want to have more consistent calculations in streaming systems. People want also to have support for multiple platforms, for clouds, for example, that your programming model can be executed in the cloud and you don't care about operations. Or even with these new resource allocators, for example, like Kubernetes or Mesos that appeared recently. And of course, the push into machine learning also bring the push into the need of different languages support, because the big data world was too Java-centric. Let's say that most of these systems I presented were based in Java, but most of the tools and that the people in machine learning use are written in Python. So in the end, there is also a need to support more languages, and more important than more languages, more ecosystems. Because the language is one thing, but all the tools and all the things that libraries that come with this language is another. And of course, we continue with new things also, like for example, new databases. There is the world recent move into the new, what they call new SQL databases, and is the world thing of CodeRushDB and Spanner and all this new family of databases. So the evolution is still there, and we have to have a solid foundation that allows us to grow with all the changes that are still continue to happen in the big data world. So we are going to talk about Apache Veeam, that is this solution that we argue solves this problem. And first, if you saw in all this recent talk, what I showed was this lower line mostly, what happened in the Apache world, all the systems that we were created. But also there was the top line that was what happened at Google. And at some moment, Google improved their programming model that they use for distributed data processing, and they released it as open source, as Google Cloud Dataflow. But then after some time, they moved this into the Apache Server Foundation with the idea that people could use this programming model and run data pipelines both in Google's cloud, but also in all of these execution systems that exist in Apache, like Spark or Flink. And for me, it's a really exciting point because it's finally putting the whole act together of big data. So this is really nice. But what is concretely Apache Veeam? Apache Veeam is a unified programming model, which means that you have a conceptual framework represented by an SDK where you program things. With the goal of having, of course, efficient data processing with parallelism and all the nice things we have. We expect, and that it will be portable across systems. So this is what we do with what we call runners. But now let's go a little bit more in detail into the model. So now Alexei is going to talk about that.
Okay, every talk about Veeam, we should definitely start talking about Veeam model. This is a key concept of Veeam. And in general, Veeam provides us two things. The first thing is just your abstraction to write your pipeline and focus on the business logic. Don't care too much about backend processing runtime. The second thing is it clearly unifies processing in bounded and unbounded data, so batch and streaming. So we can run a pipeline which can process different types of data collections without major changes. The question is how to achieve that. So the first thing to do is just we need to clearly separate our event time and processing time. So event time, obviously, this is when actually some action was happened, and the processing time when we arrived in our pipeline and then we started to process it. Sorry. What is the problem? Suppose like we have a streaming data, so just unbounded collection of some actions of online game, for example. And on the bottom, we have a time of event time. So for example, first user did some action on an online game, and it happened in the 8 a.m. And we received or this event started to process just right after it actually has happened. So delay was about several minutes, so it's okay, as expected. The second user did another action, but all in the same time, actually at 8 a.m., but we received this because of some network congestions or something else a little bit later, say just later in 20 minutes. It's still accessible, acceptable, but we are should wait a bit for that, but it's okay. And the third user also did some action at the same time at 8 a.m. But we received this event several hours early because he was offline, just flying on a plane or without a connection to internet. So the question actually, what we should do is that? How we can proceed this event? Suppose like we have a plot where in the bottom have a blue line of event time and on the left have a green line axis of processing time. And we have events like scores on an online game. Theoretically, in an ideal world, all our actions should lie along this dot line. So we will see this event just right after it has happened, maybe with some small delay. Like, for example, this guy, 3 points, we just received a couple of minutes later, it's okay. But 9 points, received it later, about 7 or 8 minutes. And now it's a question, how long we should wait? Because for infinite data, we can expect that we always will have a late data. So to find a kind of trade-off and solve this problem, Beamer provide us actually 4 questions, which and provide the answers for these questions. The first question, obviously, what results are calculated. So actually, this is our business logic, what we're going to do. Are we going to sum up, to join, to create some machine learning? The second question is, where is event time in the results calculated? So it means like when event happened and when it arrived, what we should do with that, with this event. The third question, when is processing time or results materialized? So it means, okay, we have our results, but when we should emit them finally to output. And the fourth question, if we have a late data, what we should do with it? How we should proceed it? Does this late data affect our final results or not? Typical Beam pipelines can be represented like this. So in general, this is a DAG, direct acyclic graph, which consists from, I would say, 3 types of elements. Gray cylinders, this is like our input and output. This is when we read data and write data. As you can see, we can have a multiple of them. Color rectangles, this is a transform, this is transformation, kind of our business logic. And the arrows, which actually connect this transform, this is a collection, we call it P collection and Beam. And this is the elements of data. Every transform, except input-output, of course, it has an input and output collection. Let's consider these questions which we posed before, and we'll try to create a very simple pipeline based on our example of mobile game, and we have our team, and every team did some score in a game. So we create a very simple pipeline, just read data and some scores by team. So this is actually what we answer for the question what. This is our business logic. Let's see how it going kind of in time. So the green line is a processing time. So we process our data, our events when they arrive. And finally, when we saw all events, we can finally calculate the final result. This is in yellow. It's okay, it works fine, but it works only for bounded collection. It means that for batch processing. But what if we have infinite data and we want to process a streaming collection? So in this case, obviously we should split our data into chunks. We call it windows. Somehow, for example, our chunks can be 2 minutes. And as you can see here, that there are even two events which happened almost at the same time, but because of some delay, they can be processed in the different windows. How it looks like in our code. So we just add another step to apply. This is a beam transform called window, and we use a fixed windows for that. So this is fixed windows for length of 2 minutes. Let's see how it works. Okay, now it's better because we split our processing by windows, but we have all results correct, but the problem is still the same. So we need to wait until all data will be arrived. And again, it works fine for batch processing, but not for streaming. So if you want to make it working for unbounded collection, we should emit results as soon as possible. So to do that, Beam provides a conception of triggering and watermarks. So watermarks, this is a kind of heuristic estimation when we Beam thinks, or pipeline, that we are ready to emit results of our window. On a graph, we can see this is a green line, which actually watermarks, and once every window achieves a watermark, it emits results to output. So now it's much better in terms that we don't need to wait until all data will arrive, but the problem is that if you have a late data, we lose it. So for example, 9 scores, red circle, it will not be included in the final results. So our results will be incorrect. So in case if we cannot accept that, we should do something else. And for that, Beam provides which call is early firings and late firings. So it means that we can emit results earlier, but if we have a late data, it can be finally included into final results. But again, first question, what we should do with late data? And for that, Beam provides also another way or as option how to do that. In our case, we just want to sum scores. We will accumulate these pains and just to add late results to temporary early results which you already did before. Let's see how it works on our graph. So as you can see, in our window we already have a results which was on time. We have early firings which were emitted when we are watermarking that it was ready to emit. And if we have a late data, like 9 scores, they will be considered as a late firings. And finally, it will be included into our results. So in this case, we can process infinite elements of data. And we don't need to wait limitly. And we don't lose any data as well. So this is four questions which we answered, and we started from a kind of primitive batching processing and adding some features which allows us to finally to achieve our goal to process kind of complicated streaming pipeline. In general, Beam provides three types of transforms called P transforms. This is element-wise, which usually affects every element of your collection, like mapping, filtering, and so on. Grouping, of course, group by key, co-group by key from, and also several types of windows as well. So we use the fixed windows in our previous example, but also it allows you to use the sliding windows, which can be overlapped sessions. And some other stuff. their Beam vision actually to satisfy requirements of, I would say, three type of users. Of course, the first type of user is this end user who write the pipeline to process data, and they want to write the pipeline on their language, on their favorite language. Currently, Beamer supports three languages. This is Java, Python, and Go. And another type of user, this is SDK writers, who, for example, if you think that you want to add the support of your favorite language, you can do it just writing your SDK for Beam. And if you see that you want to run this Beam pipeline on another backend environment, this is runner writers. So in this case, pipeline is still the same, but you just add another runner, and Bill will be managed to do that. So in this case, we will achieve our goal of our compatibility. Currently, Beamer already supports a bunch of different runners, of course, like Apache Spark, Apache Flink, Google Dataflow. Some of them are, some others are still developing, but one of runners very interesting is a direct runner. Actually, this is a local runner, which you can run easily on a laptop. And this is, I would say, most popular runner, because every time when you run a pipeline or develop something for Beam, you check it with a direct runner. So this is the most tested runner, actually. And Beam.io also to integrate into your different environment. Beam provide a lot of different IO connectors to different data stores, file system, file formats, databases, messaging, cloud databases, almost everything. So this is what kind of theory. Now let's take some quick example. This is a very popular example because, for example, every web service has the logs, which usually are rotated and stored somewhere. Let's suppose like our logs are stored in HDFS, and we want to analyze our engagement of users. So it means that how many URLs were visited by user per day. And we want to run this calculation on our Spark cluster. So before just going into code, first word about actually what Beam pipeline is. This is there are three main things, as I mentioned probably before. This is, as every transform, it has input collection and output collection. And to apply our transform, we use a method apply. So every pipeline usually starts from reading data from any data source. So in this case, we use a text.io transform to read data from HDFS. But we can easily, as you can see, just use it to read data from other file system as well. Then we apply our custom transform with a parse log, and we just parse our logs and emit key values using map elements transform. And finally, we just count our values by keys. So pretty easy. And to run it on a cluster, on a Spark cluster, we use this Maven comment in the bottom. And to do that, we just need to provide an option to run it on a Spark runner. And some options like to specify where on which master we want to run. So pretty clear and easy to do. But as Ismail previously mentioned, so our requirements are always changing. And we should be ready for that. So suppose like we want now to identify user sessions and calculate them and calculate number of URLs visited per session. So but we don't want to wait while our logs will be rotated and stored in HDFS. So we want to get this data quickly from, for example, Kafka topic. And we want to run it on our another cluster, on a Flink cluster. So what is the session? Session is like a set of events which happen per one user, and it was happened in some period of time. In gap of this time, we can consider it like, okay, for example, 10 minutes. So in this case, just an example on top right corner, we can see that our session was about 20, 21 minutes. So we create new pipeline. We needed to, now we need to read data from Kafka. We use the Kafka IO for that. Then we apply again our parse locker transform, and as output we have still here key value pairs or collection of key values. And but to have a sessions, we apply Windows actually for that. So we have a Windows, and we have another transform sessions with a gap duration of 10 minutes. So as you can see, everything already is implemented in Vim. So just only thing which you need to do to write our code to parse our logs. And to run this pipeline on a cluster, we use almost the same command which we did before, but instead of a Spark runner, we needed to provide the option to run it on us with a Flink runner. And finally, of course, our requirements are changing and adding. We always should be ready to kind of to change it, and we don't want to spend too much time on that, so it should not be too complicated. And suppose like we have two new requirements to identify top and longest session per day, and as a kind of final report, we want to store them in an edge-based table. So we take our previous pipeline code and just extend it a bit. So we add a section to calculate to identify unique sessions. We apply windowing again, and just now we split our elements into windows per day, and then another beam transform of top elements with a custom comparator. Then we prepare our data to store in HBase using HBase put. And then we apply HBase out IO, sorry, as a sync and write data into HBase table. So looks like pretty easy, and it works on a different backend environment. So just a quick summary, what we want to take home. This is a Beam provides you unified API for batch and streaming. It clearly separates logic to write your pipeline, and don't care too much about where it's going to be run, on which backend. But in the same time, we can run it on the multiple distributed processing environments easily. And thanks to rich collection of IO which we already have, it can be easily integrated into data processing ecosystem. So now I give a word back to Ismail.
Okay. Okay, so now we are
going to talk about where we are today. I mean, well, we just saw that with Beam you have this unified model that you use to program, and easily you can move between systems and adapt things with change, for example, IOs. But of course, Beam still continues to improve. And we have 5 lines of improvements that we are working on as a community at this moment. The first one is to improve this idea of composable IO connectors, where we have a more abstract kind of transform that Pardoo, that's our map, that can be splitted, that's called splittable DFN. If you are interested in this idea in general, we are going to talk in detail in the next presentation, so I don't go deep into that. Then we have this thing called schema-aware peak collections. The idea is that now we have a schema representation as part of the collections, and this allows for better APIs that are more record-like APIs. And this, of course, is the base of streaming SQL, which is another area of work. And then we have the world portability work, and I will go in detail on that one. But the idea is that we want to have real language portability, because so far, I will show this slide better. And finally, the Go SDK. But let's start with schema-aware peak collection. The idea that we have is that we represent the structure of the data with a schema. And with this, we can improve our APIs. We can infer coders, for example. We can provide different kind of coders too. We can make the I/O connector simpler if in case that they have an associated schema. And we have the improvements in the APIs where we can make simpler code than doing general functions just to filter fields, for example. In this case, we are filtering all the reviews that are bigger than 4. And we select 2 fields and rewrite it. So this is slightly simpler than our current APIs. Of course, this is Java, it's a bit verbose, but it's like it is. And then we have the streaming SQL, and there the idea is that we have a transform that allows us to do SQL queries, and this comes from the idea of the duality of a stream and a table. So I mean that you can accumulate data as a stream and it represents a table and vice versa. And as I said, this is based on the row and schema constructs that were in the previous slide. And this is powered also by another Apache project that is Apache Calcite. And I didn't put the logo of Calcite because it's horrible. No, I'm kidding, but this is more or less like it looks. Okay. So then now the question of language portability, and I will go in detail on this. The idea is that we want to support any language in any runtime. So what happens if we want to do this? For example, imagine that you wrote the code in Python, and then you are running this thing in Hadoop, let's say. Well, Hadoop is really oriented towards Java, and you don't have an easy way to put the code there. So we want also to reuse language transforms that exist in one language in other. For example, today we have a really solid Kafka connector in Java, but in Python there is not a Kafka connector. Maybe I can reuse this Kafka connector from one language to the other. The same happens with the TensorFlow transform that exists in Python, but we cannot use it from Java. So we would like to benefit from that. And also another idea is that we want to unify the execution model between all the different runners. So this is another goal of this. And we want to make also the easier for people who are bringing new languages into Beam. They have like a standard way to do that. That's another consequence of this portability effort. And the real issue we have today is that the Python users who want to execute Beam code in a distributed fashion cannot do it with the Apache project. I mean, you can do it in Google Dataflow, but you cannot do it in Apache Flink or Apache Spark. Well, there is ongoing work so this happens. This works in Apache Flink at this moment, and soon in Apache Spark. And to understand more or less the general idea of how this will work, let's see how runners work today. The idea is that if you write your program, let's say in orange there, you send your Java code, for example, and then the runner just translates this program into the destination system. This is the work of the runner. In destination system, let's say, for example, Spark. So when in Beam we said we had a pardew, this function, this user-defined function that goes into the pardew, is translated in the end into an RDD.map of Spark, for those of you who know Spark. So in the end, it ends up being executed there, the same code that we put. But if this were Python, we couldn't simply do that, and especially we cannot do it in an isolated way. So the whole portability effort is to provide that richer experience and approach to do this with Python. So let's think you wrote your pipeline in Python. We represent this pipeline into an abstract format, let's say, abstract between language, with protocol buffers. And then we do a similar kind of translation as we did before, but notice that the user-defined functions are not executed immediately by the system. So we won't do rdd.map of a Python function because we just can't. But what we do is to instruct a Docker container on this. So we'll say to the Docker container, okay, execute me this function for this data. And this is what all these services that are down in the diagram do. So this is a considerable refactor of the running model of Beam, of how runners work. But this is a really nice nice idea, because in the end we'll have the we have the support for this diagram that was in the beginning, all the languages in all the execution systems of BIM. And the first language that was fully integrated with this approach is Go. Go is a recent addition into the BIM family, and it's like the first SDK that proves the ideas of portability. So far, it's an ongoing progress. I mean, Go can do map reduce, like basic map reduce, but they're still growing. And if you are interested in Go, you are welcome to contribute. So in general, well, just to finish, well, we have a vibrant community of contributors and companies. We invite anyone who is interested in these subjects to participate, to try BIM, to test it, find report anything you find. We care a lot about this. And of course, if you have new ideas, feature requests, everything is welcome. If you want to improve some documentation that you found is wrong, or more interesting, if you care about some programming language and you want to bring this into BIM, that would be super nice. I mean, if someone wants to do .NET, I would be really happy to see this happening. And of course, there is still going working new runners for other execution systems for people who care. Maybe if somebody has the goal to do a new native one starting from zero with BIM, why not? And as I said, BIM is in a perfect shape to jump in. We have stable APIs from the user point of view, and now we're going really into the direction of having a really solid foundation with the portability APIs. So that's it. If you want to learn more, you can. I will share these slides, and you can take a look at all this. And of course, join the mailing list and contact us. Thank you. If somebody has questions, we have like 5 minutes. So. Yes. Okay, I'm going to repeat the question. The question is if we support security in our target systems, for example, Kafka. Well, of course, the I/O connectors have ways to authenticate and do this kind of stuff, but out of the box, we don't provide more than that, only authentication. Of course, if you want to encrypt data that is moving, is your task, because this is an user problem, so. Yeah. No, we have authentication in the connectors, of course. Yes. And I don't know in the execution systems. I don't know if some of these execution systems have. But this is not part of the model, so we don't have to translate. I suppose you have to tweak that. For example, if you want Spark to auto encrypt data at the moment, you can do it also there. So, we don't do it because we don't need to do it. This is a different task. Someone else. Okay, so this is another question. How do you compare BIM with Apache NiFi? I hope I'm not wrong. I know that Apache NiFi is like a graphical interface to do this kind of streaming pipelines. I don't really know deep into Apache NiFi. I think the difference is that BIM cares a lot about this event time model. I mean, all these things that Alexei explained, just to compensate, to have some kind of consistent streaming. I don't know if NiFi does that. That's a difference. But a part of this, I think they both are streaming, but both have different goals. I probably will compare with Apache Flink because they are really similar in the execution model. They are closer, but well, BIM has the difference that we try to cover all the execution systems, including Apache Flink. Yes, please.
So, on your picture, there was lots of different systems that were supported in various places. Do you see over time that growing or shrinking?
That's an interesting question. And actually, these last days was we have, for example, one runner that is the Gearpump runner that the Gearpump project didn't graduate at Apache. This happened last week. So now we are opening this discussion of, well, maybe we should go downer with these systems that are not actively maintained or are a little bit incomplete. So far we haven't done it because it has not been a burden. And for example, for the connectors also, we have like a really rich set of maintained connectors in Apache, which is not the case for all the other projects. I mean, like Spark has some, Flink has some, but most of the others are in other random GitHub projects. We are trying to keep the experience together, but well, sometimes we will have to reduce also.
I just want to add that I didn't mention, but we have a compatibility matrix of features which are supported or not supported on every runner. And adding new runners and adding new features, it makes it more complicated. So it's open question.
Okay. Yes.
And is
Amazon Kinesis?
We already supported.
Yes, it's already supported. Maybe it was not in the slide, but it's already supported. He fixed it, actually. and we also, one thing that's interesting is that we support, well, of course, all the Apache and open source connectors, but also the cloud ones, I mean, all the Google ones, because Google is involved in that. But we have also different for Amazon, we have SNS, SQS, we have Kinesis, so what people expect to have out of the box.
A couple questions, let's take SQS one more time.
Thank you.